You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Cadet. This morning, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention identified the United States' first confirmed case of the Omicron coronavirus variant in California. The World Health Organization has already designated Omicron a variant of concern, stating it poses a very high global risk. So, what does that mean, and what does it mean for us here in Idaho? Well, joining us today to answer those questions are Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, along with Dr. Frank Johnson, the Chief Medical Officer for St. Luke's Boise, Elmore, and McCall. I want to thank both of you for joining us today.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Pate, let's just start with Omicron. What is it? What do we know? Let's just start with those two things.
Sure thing. So, Gemma, we've been talking on your show for more than a year now that the discussion should not be all about the death rates and whether people perceive that it's a high death rate or a low rate. The main point that we've discussed is we have to control the spread of this disease. And the reason that we have to decrease the spread is obviously when we don't, that's what overwhelms our hospitals. That's what causes us to have more restrictions on our activities. But the main thing is the more the virus transmits, the more it will acquire mutations. The more it acquires mutations, the more chance you have that it's going to become a variant of concern. My analogy is if you go to the slot machines, the more times you pull that lever, the greater chance that maybe you're going to hit a jackpot. I don't think Omicron is the jackpot, but it certainly is a concerning variant. And this is the consequence of not controlling the spread of the disease. So the big lesson is, even if Omicron does not turn out to be a huge concern for us, and we don't know, it may be, it is another warning that this is not over. We could have more variants in the future, and they could be concerning. So what do we know specifically about Omicron? First of all, the name. It's the World Health Organization uses the Greek alphabet to name the variants. And so Greek alphabet is not something that most people here are very comfortable with or know about, but Omicron is one of the Greek letters. All right, why is this a variant of concern? This new variant of COVID has a striking number of mutations. We're used to seeing alpha, beta, gamma, and delta, and we've seen a number of mutations, but this one has probably two, three, four times the number of mutations that we've seen before. And it has some concerning ones. It has mutations that we know have been associated with increased transmissibility. And it has mutations that we know have been associated with some degree of getting around immunity, whether vaccine induced or prior infection. Now, just because those mutations are there, that doesn't mean that's how this will actually play out. So what happens is when you have to take all of these mutations together to see how it actually manifests in the virus, and we don't know that yet. So is it more transmissible? We suspect it may be, but that is far from certain. I think we'll have better answer in the weeks to come, but that remains an open question. Does it cause more severe disease? I think the answer, again, is we don't know, but there's no evidence that is persuasive to tell us that it either causes milder or more severe disease. There are concerning factors, but we don't have any proof yet. And then the third thing is, what about if you've previously had COVID? Are you going to be protected from this? We've heard some concerning anecdotes, but that's not science, that's not proof, but we've heard concerning anecdotes out of South Africa that they saw a number of people who just recovered from Delta and are getting reinfected with Omicron. So that's a concern. Mm. We've also heard of people who were vaccinated and got Omicron. What we need to do is get a lot more information, because the real question is not that people can get the so-called breakthrough infection or a reinfection. The question is, when they do, do they get less sick? Are they getting benefit from the vaccines? I would say at this point, we have no reason not to believe that the vaccines aren't going to protect against this one. They've protected against all the previous ones, but we've got to test that. But it is a call to listeners. One, if you have not been vaccinated, you really, really need to think about going ahead and getting vaccinated now. And second, if you are due for a booster, you really should be strongly encouraged to get the booster.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Johnson, what are you most concerned about with this new Omicron variant?
Oh, thanks. I think the most concerning feature would be if this evades our immunity. We don't, as Dr. Pate pointed out, we don't have any evidence to date that it does significantly evade immunity, whether it's vaccination or natural immunity. So at least as of now, we don't have evidence that it evades immunity, but there's certainly that reason for concern. I'm glad we're doing more investigation and evaluation. And you know, the other thing I would say that would be most concerning about this is that that number of mutations does increase the likelihood it could behave differently than what our previous variants have. We don't know that it will behave differently, but it could. So I think those are the reasons that more investigation, more evaluation are certainly appropriate. I think with Omicron, with other variants that inevitably will come up, there's both a combination of news. This is something that's new. Certainly it's worth investigating and evaluating. But then there's also that that same old story that Dr. Pate has pointed out, which is it's still appropriate that people get vaccinated. We still need those boosters. It's still appropriate that we take those same infection prevention practices that we've learned to do over the last year and a half, being mindful of wearing masks when it's necessary and appropriate, being mindful of social distancing, and being mindful of those infection prevention practices that we all really need to be aware of. And so that's the same old story with this. So it's a combination of those factors with any of these variants. I don't want people to get too concerned about it. I want people to remember that still keep doing those things that we've been encouraging you to do all along. And at least today, the evidence is that all of those measures will still continue to be effective.
So there was an article in Bloomberg, I believe, yesterday that talked about some concerning numbers involving young children, toddlers, and the Omicron variant. Dr. Pate, in the current epicenter of the Omicron outbreak, toddlers, according to officials there, are making up 10% of hospitalizations. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, I found that to be shocking and something I think that, frankly, parents have all been concerned about as we have moved through this pandemic, as we've all anxiously waited to try to get our kids vaccinated. And now at least you can up to, you know, down to 5 years old, but children younger than that cannot be vaccinated. And now we're seeing this 10% of hospitalizations in the epicenter.
Yeah, Jim, that was very alarming and very concerning. I'm not ready to make any conclusions based on that, because there are a lot of differences between our two health systems. The general states of those populations are different, but it is very alarming. So on the side of why this should concern us and why we should certainly look into this, is that what we have seen in the progressive evolution of this virus, the thing that seems to drive that evolution is increasing transmissibility. You'll remember with Alpha, which we saw here in the United States around April or so, you know, what the big difference was there was it was much more transmissible than the virus we had dealt with last year. And then Delta, mm-hmm. of course, really upped the game on that. So there obviously is an evolutionary advantage to the virus to become more transmissible. When it becomes more transmissible, that's when you see more kids get infected. And that's what we saw with Delta. So that's concerning. The other thing that's concerning is young children's immune systems are different than older kids and adults. And there are some ways that it's different that are good, and there's some ways that are different that are bad. So that's going to be one of the things we're going to have to look at. Are they having problems because of the immaturity of their immune system? But we don't know. I would say, and just kind of echo what Dr. Johnson's comments was, you know, what this means for parents is the same thing we've been talking about. And that is what you do for those children that are too young to be vaccinated. You surround them with people that are vaccinated. Studies have shown when everybody in the household is vaccinated that can be, the risk of infection to those that can't be vaccinated goes dramatically down. So surround your children that can't be vaccinated with people who are. Make sure that as parents that you're fully vaccinated, get your boosters if you're due. Make sure everybody in the family is vaccinated, and be careful about who your unvaccinated children are coming in contact with who you don't know are vaccinated.
I'd like both of your thoughts on this. What about just frank COVID fatigue? I mean, with the announcement of this new variant. And what I mean by that is I will even tell you my personal experience when the news media last week started talking about this new variant. And I had taken the week off. I literally said to myself, I cannot read anything about this. I cannot ingest any of this information right now because it will not be good for my mental health. Like, I am so fatigued by this because I knew coming into work this week that I would have to take in so much information. You know, on the flip side, normal, regular people don't have to ingest the news like people like myself, like doctors do. But there is this sense of fatigue. So Dr. Johnson, I'll start with you. I mean, what advice do you have for folks who may be, you know, feeling that and frankly just don't even want to hear about this anymore?
I think it's a great question and certainly something that we want to be mindful of. My biggest advice would be to not let ourselves become distracted from what we know works and what we know is effective. And we've got now a huge body of evidence to support the ongoing effectiveness of vaccinations and the effectiveness of masks. And we've seen that those work. So in spite of the new things that will be cropping up, like Omicron, let's not allow the concern or the, we shouldn't be panicked over that. We should have some concern mm-hmm. and vigilance, but certainly that can lead into fatigue and panic with the way that we've had such a terrible last year and a half. But let's not let that happen. Let's focus on what we know works, the strategies that we have seen to be effective and that we have confidence in, vaccinations, masking, and appropriate distancing. And because we've been able to achieve success, we've been able to relax some of those restrictions, and that's been of course, great. So pragmatic optimism would be the way I would try and approach these new things that come up. We need to remain vigilant. We need to continue to be mindful of those precautions that are effective, that we know are effective, but not let ourselves fall into the panic that these things can trigger. That'd be my thought.
And Dr. Pate, your thoughts?
Well, I think Dr. Johnson said it beautifully. I think that's exactly right. You know, there's going to be a whole host of different reactions. Certainly, there are many with COVID fatigue, as you mentioned. You know, Dr. Johnson and I cannot wait for the day that we don't need to talk about COVID again. But we understand the COVID fatigue. We need to understand, I think it's just a time to reflect. For all of you who are fatigued, for all of you who are upset about the disruption to your children's school, the disruption to sports, the disruption to other activities, I think the best way I have found when I'm feeling you know, burdened by challenges, is to figure out how can I take control? And the way that you can take control is by doing exactly what Dr. Johns has said. Get yourself fully vaccinated. When it's time, get your booster, because then you will have done everything you can. Then assess your circumstances. If you're going to be around other people who are fully vaccinated and boosted, you're probably in good shape. If you're going to be out with people you don't know, you got to take those precautions Dr. Johnson mentioned, masking, avoiding a very large gathering of people, those kinds of things. But the more that we all come together and say, let's stop being victims, let's take control of this. What do we got to do? We got to get our friends and neighbors and family vaccinated.
If you have a question for our doctors, this is the time to email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and we will hopefully get that question answered during today's program. Our panel today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Frank Johnson, Chief Medical Officer for St. Luke's, Boise, Elmore, and McCall. Before we get to listener questions, Dr. Johnson, I wanted to talk a little bit about the flu and flu season. First off, what are you seeing so far in your hospital system, and what's your concern level as we move into this?
Yeah, thanks. Currently, we haven't seen a significant impact from influenza yet this season. There's certainly that concern, and I know that myself, my colleagues, and our public health officials are all concerned by the possibility that after last year, when we really had limitations on public gatherings and restrictions on size, that this year, with less of those restrictions in place, we could see some increased transmission of influenza that might place some added strains on our healthcare system and create more illness. I'm emphasizing could, might, may in those conversations, because we just don't know. It's important that everyone get the influenza vaccination in addition to their COVID booster. That's important for helping to reduce the impact that influenza can have on our community. We're concerned. We're monitoring. But as of today, we're not seeing a significant impact. And hopefully, that'll be the case moving forward. Hopefully, those same practices that we're all following to help reduce the spread of disease will have the same impact on influenza. Influenza less transmissible than COVID. So the same strategies that work for COVID in terms of reducing the incidence of spread work even better for influenza. So we'll just have to wait and see. Getting the influenza vaccine also very important.
And Dr. Johnson, we lifted crisis standards of care with the exception of North Idaho. The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare did that. What has that meant for St. Luke's, and how are you doing since those standards have been relaxed?
Well, thanks. And it is certainly great that in the southern and eastern part of Idaho, we've been able to de-escalate from crisis standards of care. That's really a reflection of the fact that our capacity has improved, that COVID hospitalizations have continued to decline. We had a peak in the St. Luke's health system of up over 310. We were at around 320, 330 patients at one point. And we're now down to around 45 or 50 patients hospitalized throughout the system. So dramatic decrease in hospitalizations. What that has meant is a number of things. One, we've been able to close our surge overflow units that were being used to provide care for patients when we didn't have traditional space to care for them. That's great. It has also allowed us to have staff return to their normal places of work. We had nurses working in different roles. We had people who had administrative roles who were providing bedside care. We had doctors working in different roles to provide care. Everyone's back doing their usual work, which is great. That has meant improved access in our clinics and ambulatory sites. It's meant improved access for procedures and surgeries, and we've started back up, really ramping those surgeries back up as we now have the capacity to do that. And it's meant a bit of a reprieve for our staff and our docs who were worn out and tired from all the extra demands in patient care that were being required. So all of that is just really great news for our teams here. It wouldn't be appropriate, though, to not balance that out with the continued stresses that are being seen up in North Idaho. And they are continuing to really be strained and stressed. We are looking in St. Luke's about how we can help alleviate some of that stress in North Idaho. I'm not sure what that might look like, but they're still really struggling with high COVID numbers and substantial impact on their capacity in North Idaho. So I hope that they will see the same decreases there that we have seen here locally.
Yeah. Dr. Pate, John sent us in a question that I think is important to get an answer on. And he wrote, what can my wife and I tell our daughters who are hesitant to vaccinate our eligible grandchildren, ages 5 and 8, because they question whether a sufficient number of children of the same age participated in the Pfizer clinical trials?
Wow, this is a fantastic question, Gemma, and a very important one, because mm-hmm. as parents, our primary responsibility is to protect our children. And I know that there's a lot of parents struggling with this, and it's made worse because there is so much misinformation out there, and unfortunately, a few doctors spreading disinformation. So let's just talk about the facts. I think if we give people the facts, they'll make the right decision. So let's just talk about the facts. First of all, I think when you're weighing this decision, it's not a decision, do I vaccinate or not? And what are the risks of vaccinating or not vaccinating? It's really, and what Omicron should teach us is this is not over. We've gone through every time we've had a surge. We just finished our fourth surge. Every time we hear all this discussion about, well, it's over, it's going to be endemic and so forth. Well, that's a long ways off because we just mm-hmm. don't have enough people vaccinated. So it's not going away. We're going to continue to see this. And I think there's a growing consensus among the world's experts that your choice is not, do I get vaccinated or not? Your choice is, how am I going to encounter COVID? Am I going to get vaccinated against it, or am I going to get the infection? Because eventually everybody's going to get infected if they're not protected. So that's the decision. So then the thing that I think is hard for a lot of parents is, well, but this doesn't affect kids. And that's been a narrative we've heard. Let me correct that. COVID-19 is a childhood illness. When we started with COVID back in early 2020, and you remember in the last segment I talked about, every time the virus adapts and becomes more transmissible, we see more kids infected. Last year, children accounted for about 3% of cases. Today, more than 25% of cases. Just to put that into perspective, more than 6 million children in the United States have been infected with SARS-CoV-2. Mm. Including 2 million between the ages of 5 and 11. And as of last month, we were seeing about 100,000 children per week get infected. Now, of those, of course, most children do well. However, we should not forget the fact a lot of kids did end up getting hospitalized. And a lot of times we couldn't predict. We can predict. Last year, we could predict the adults. It was going to be older. They had medical conditions. You can't do that with kids. We a lot of these kids don't have obvious risk factors. And yes, you're not going to see as many deaths in that age group, but this COVID has become enough that it's now in the top 10 causes of death of U.S. children. So wow. One thing that parents are going to wrestle with is the fear, because it's getting stoked by some of these physicians that are spreading disinformation about, okay, you could get myocarditis, you could get heart inflammation from the vaccine. And that's true. It happens in about 5 in every million children that get vaccinated. It's most prevalent when we look at young men, but it can happen. But again, the question is not the risk of vaccination versus not getting vaccinated. The question is, the risk of vaccination versus the risk of COVID. So let's talk about myocarditis in COVID. You are 100 times more likely to get COVID, I'm sorry, to get myocarditis if you get COVID than to get the myocarditis from the vaccine. And with the vaccine, while the myocarditis tends to be very mild, resolves generally on its own, we see people critically ill with the myocarditis caused by the infection itself. And it is certainly our suspicion that given with the 5 to 11, that we're actually only giving them a third of the dose that we give to the older kids and adults, that the rate of myocarditis in children may be even less. The last points I just want to make is we have to, and we've made this point on this program before, it's not just about your chances of dying. It's complications, long COVID. There's complications that we are still working out and we don't even understand correctly. I think the other things you have to throw in the mix of your decision, do you plan to travel? Because if your child is not vaccinated, that's going to impact your travel plans. And for sure, you don't want your child sick when you're overseas or someplace where you may not have as close access to care. Also think about the kinds of activities that you're going to take your kids to. More and more, those are going to be restricted to people that are vaccinated. And then you have to also consider it's just not just a matter of kids getting infected. It's who they may infect. Grandma and grandpa, a parent that has immune compromise, those kind of things. So this is a tough decision. I get it. But I want parents to put this in perspective. You vaccinate your kids against influenza, meningitis, chickenpox, a lot of things that even before vaccines, they killed far fewer than COVID does. So let's put in perspective, let's realize that the reason this is as big a concern as it is there's so much disinformation and politicization. And last is just keep in mind, making a decision not to vaccinate your kids does not mean you have now eliminated risk. You just have, okay, it's not the risk of the vaccine, it's now the risk of COVID.
Right. And Dr. Pate, I have to say, I mean, as a parent myself, and, you know, having a child that just got his second shot last Friday, our decision, my husband and I, was I would rather risk any side effect of the vaccine than my child getting COVID. And, you know, I understand that people may have disagreement about that, but you're right that if you're given the information, the correct information, hopefully you will make the right decision.
That's right. And keep in mind, there are so many things that we take as medications, supplements, all kinds of things that we have far less data about than we do with these vaccines because we've given so many of them. So just keep in mind, again, I understand it's a difficult decision, but I think when you have the facts and when you aren't getting scared by some of the people that are, I don't know what their motivations are, but they're trying to get you not to vaccinate. When you get rid of that and you just look at the facts, I do think the decision becomes much more clear.
We do want you to know that we're putting a special episode together of our Doctor's Roundtable. Basically, what it is we want to know what is the single most important question about COVID-19, the vaccine and variants that you think needs to be answered. We are doing this special Idaho Matters Doctor Roundtable. It will be in both English and in Spanish so that we can make sure our entire community gets this information. So email us, go to boisestatepublicradio.org, send us your question. There's a link at the top of the page that you can click on to answer that, to get your question submitted, and then we can hopefully answer that on that special Doctor's Roundtable coming up in just a couple of weeks. Now, continuing our current conversation, remember, if you have an email for today's show, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu with your question. So our panel, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Frank Johnson, the Chief Medical Officer for St. Luke's Boise, Elmore, and McCall. We have quite a few questions today about booster shots. So everyone wanting to know when they should get them. Quite a few people having been vaccinated in the spring have not gotten their booster, had a breakthrough infection. So I'm going to read Tara's question from Meridian. She wrote in saying, my healthcare worker husband and I were fully vaccinated last spring. Our three oldest children received their first dose last month. We have a four-month-old and a four-year-old. They cannot be vaccinated. I had a breakthrough infection last month. Should I get my booster now or wait because of that recent infection? But also, should I wait because I hear they are developing new boosters for this variant? Dr. Pate, how would you answer that?
I would recommend to everyone, do not wait for a booster for this new variant. The earliest that we're really contemplating that even if we need a booster for this variant, which we don't know the answer to that question yet. In fact, most of us suspect we won't. But even if there's going to be a new booster for this variant, we're not going to have it until probably March of next year. So do not wait for a Omicron-specific booster. The answer is for everyone. If it has been 6 months since your, let me qualify, everybody over the age 18. If it has been 6 months since your second Pfizer or Moderna, you should go get vaccinated and you should do that soon, this week. If it has been 2 months since you got your J&J vaccine, you should go get that boost. Now, somebody who has COVID or has recently had it, like this person, what we generally recommend is that, and the one exception would be if you got monoclonal antibodies, and I won't go into that for sake of time, but let's assume you did not and you recently had COVID. If you have largely symptomatically recovered, then you can go ahead and get your booster. We just wouldn't want to be vaccinating somebody while they were still suffering all the acute effects of COVID. So yes, she should get vaccinated. Just once she's feeling like she's kind of recovered from this infection, go get the booster. Do not wait for an Omicron specific booster.
Dr. Payne, can you clarify again very quickly? So if you've had a breakthrough infection, how long should you wait before you get that booster? Because we are getting questions, you know, about that as well.
If you received monoclonal antibodies, there's a recommendation to wait 90 days. I don't think we're going to stick with that, but that hasn't been revised yet to my knowledge. So the current recommendation is wait 90 days. But for most of you who did not get monoclonal antibodies, if you had, let's take several scenarios. One is, let's say you're getting Pfizer or Moderna, and let's say you got your first shot, but then you got COVID. Should you get your second shot? Yes, get your second shot once you are feeling like you're recovered from that episode of COVID. And it's okay if that means you're not going to fall within the 21 or 28 day guideline. If that pushes you out some, that's perfectly fine. Just wait till you get recovered, then go get your second shot to complete your primary series. Now, if instead you got your first and your second, and now you've gotten COVID, then wait till you're recovered from the COVID again. Don't do it while you're very sick. Wait till you get to feeling better. And then if that has been 6 months since your second shot, go ahead and get your booster. You do need the booster. The infection itself is actually going to boost your immune system too, but the combination is going to put you in the very best position. Mm.
Dr. Johnson, Terry sent us this email, and I want to read it in its entirety, but to also remember, Terry and other listeners, that, of course, always talk to your medical doctor yourself to get specific answers. But Terry wrote in saying, I'm a type 1 diabetic. I have had all three COVID shots. Recently, I was told I have an autoimmune skin disease. The diagnosis isn't clear. The physician's assistant has decided to suppress my immune system to see if the condition improves. They're using, I don't know if I can say this properly, methotrexate tablets, 15 milligrams weekly. My question is, how much will this treatment reduce the effectiveness of my COVID vaccines over time? Will the treatment put me at a greater risk of catching COVID?
Oh, thanks. And for one, Terry, nice job getting all of your COVID vaccination and booster. That's the best thing. I would say, first of all, since you were not on methotrexate while you had your immunizations, you should have developed a good, robust immune response to those vaccines. So that's great. Now, the fact that you are continuing, that you'll now be taking methotrexate, it's not entirely clear how much effect that specific medication can impact your risk of COVID. There's some conflicting evidence. Some would say maybe a little bit of an increased risk of catching COVID, maybe not. And so I think the impact of methotrexate on your risk of getting COVID is small, but whether it's a positive or negative effect, we don't know. I would say that continuing to follow the advice of your doctor, continuing to follow good infection prevention practices will be important while you're on methotrexate. But I would be, at least today with the evidence and information we have, I'd be encouraged that if there is any added risk from that specific medication, the risk would be small. Now, that doesn't hold true for all immune suppressant medications. Some of the more potent immune suppressants can increase your risk of having COVID and not developing a good immune response from vaccinations.
Dr. Johnson, I know we talked about the easing of crisis standards of care earlier on the program. We got a question in from Richard in regards to this. So briefly, he says that his brother had to go to the ER in Nampa over the weekend. He's been in treatment for stage 4 lung cancer for 17 months. He is near retirement age. He's on oxygen. He's experiencing side effects of treatments, impairments due to pressures from tumors. On Saturday, he was in danger due to a depletion of electrolytes and the resulting drop in blood pressure. The ER did admit him to the hospital, but his brother had to wait for about 24 hours to get an available room. And Richard goes on to say COVID is still impacting local hospitals, even though daily COVID cases have decreased. So, Dr. Johnson, I know you said that we're seeing things ease up for our medical professionals, but are we still seeing issues like Richard describes, maybe even in smaller areas like McCall or something like that?
Yeah, we certainly are continuing to see impacts of COVID on our hospitals and on healthcare. Yeah, the battle isn't won. The mission is not accomplished. Yeah. We're seeing those effects. It's just at a much lower level. The other thing that's impacting our capacity, though, is the amount of delayed care that probably occurred while we were under crisis standards. There were surgeries and procedures that were delayed that we are now working hard to accommodate and get scheduled. That is impacting our capacity to provide care. And we're certainly continuing to see high volumes of patients needing care for other things that are not related to COVID that are impacting our capacity. So hospitals are still busy places. That's absolutely for sure. It's a combination of those people who are needing care for COVID, but it's also patients needing care for other things that we're seeing a real increase in some of those now, probably because some of that care was delayed over the last couple of months. So I'm sorry that Richard's brother had to wait for that room. I hope he certainly got the care they needed and is doing better. But we will continue to see those types of surges. And that happens during the wintertime, even without COVID as well, where we'll see increases in patient volumes with other illnesses and other diseases that tend to increase this time of year.
And I think Dr. Johnson, Richard brought up such a good point, though, about this impacting his brother who does not have COVID, right? I think so much of this, we and the public has focused on COVID, right? But there has been a domino effect in our healthcare system. So even if you have been doing all of the right things, people like Richard's brother are feeling unnecessary impacts of people's personal choices.
That's exactly correct. Those procedures, those surgeries, the clinic visits that had to be delayed or postponed are all, it's affecting real people. And those people are not needing that care because of COVID themselves, but the delay is the result of those who are needing hospitalization for the effects of COVID. So it does have a community impact on all of our care when vaccination rates are low and when that leads to an increase in the number of hospitalized patients with COVID. Yeah, a lot of those stories are heartbreaking from the last couple of months with patients who had cancer surgery that had to be delayed because other care was taking a greater precedence and was of more urgent need. One of my pediatric surgical colleagues talking about kids needing to have surgeries delayed through no fault of their own, through no impact of their own, but we just didn't have the capacity to provide that care at the time that they would have liked to have it. It was acceptable to delay those procedures, but it did create impacts on those kids and parents and families when we had to delay those surgeries. So there is definitely a community impact from those who are needing hospitalizations for COVID. And as we've talked about before, hospitalizations for COVID are in unvaccinated people almost universally.
So again, Dr. Payne, we only have about a minute and a half left, but I want to quickly get this question from Emily in. She says, please ask Dr. Pate about the value of vaccination regarding transmission. Does being vaccinated protect me and others from infection?
Yes, it does. It's not perfect, but yes, if you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, you are going to have much decreased risk of getting infected. And so that is that, plus the things that Dr. Johnson said, avoid large groups, wear a mask when you're out with people that you don't know if they're vaccinated, that kind of thing. That's going to protect you from getting infected. If you do get infected, and we could certainly talk about it when we have more time, but it also will make it less likely that you're going to transmit the virus to somebody else. We've got some good studies on that. It's not impossible, but it'll be less likely.
I want to thank both of you for taking time out of your day today. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Frank Johnson, the Chief Medical Officer for St. Luke's, Boise, Elmore, and McCall. Remember, if you have a question for our doctors, you can send us an email at idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and we'll get to those questions next week. Also, we are planning a special doctor roundtable in both English and Spanish. We want to hear from you. What is your most important question that you think needs to be answered in regards to the virus, the vaccine, and the variants? Go to our homepage, boisestatepublicradio.org. Click on the link, submit your question there. I want to thank all of you for being a part of Idaho Matters. Our producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. Again, a big thanks to Dr. Pate and Dr. Johnson. Thank you both for your time today.
Thanks, Gemma.
And it is Wednesday. I hope you have a good rest of your day. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you back here tomorrow.